Good morning, team.
Good morning, John. Chin chin.
Shot in the dark.
Shot in the dark. Get into this coffee, mate.
Yeah. It's good. The coffee's strong. Company's good. And I'm really excited today.
What's that about, Phil?
We've got a super topic. It's one of those philosophical podcasts where could really go anywhere.
And probably will.
And probably will. And we're talking about what it is we don't know in the very general sense of the term. And for me, what I don't know is what we could possibly learn. And in our job of helping athletes better themselves, the more we don't know, doing an okay job. I mean, we're winning a little bit, aren't we?
We've had a few wins.
You know?
Seems to be going all right.
Yeah, and we don't really know a lot. I think we're sort of in a general consensus. There's not really a lot to know. I mean, let's start a little bit bigger. And let's talk sort of about... I mean, the great example is we don't know anything about the sea. We haven't discovered all the species there is to discover on the Earth. We might not be able to see everything that's in front of us.
Yeah, that's the coolest thing, isn't it?
We're not sure we're seeing what we're actually seeing.
Or that what I see is the same as what you see. That's what something that always baffles me. Like, my blue might be a different shade to your blue, or my...
There's only one blue.
Brilliant. Okay. But how do you know that?
Let's not get into the female spectrum.
How can you know?
It's Jen. My wife with a million different blues.
Yeah, I mean, but your t-shirt is a different colour to this. Anyway, but you don't know that I'm seeing the same as you're seeing. I think that's
true,
mad. Right. How do you not know that?
Colour blindness. That, like, what do they see?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, how's it blind? So is everything in black and white? Like, what are they seeing?
No, that's, I don't think. I think we know that that's not the case.
But that is it, isn't it? But that is it.
So I'm not ginger to a colourblind person.
No. No, you are.
So why am I?
So, we've done a podcast to highlight... A great example is the insignificance of the time we've been here. And someone said recently to me, we're just living in an ice age, and everything has been an ice age, and we're just in one of the warm periods in an ice age, rather than we sort of give ourselves that self-importance of
that this is how it is.
This is how it is, and then ice came at some point. Earth is a nice planet. It's always been that, and then every now and again it gets warm for a couple of hundred years or a couple of thousand years, and then, you know, some life can come, and then the ice age comes again. So, I mean, we just have no, we'd have no understanding, sort of, again, very philosophical, but we have no understanding of where we come from, where we are, what we're doing. I mean, the scientists do a wonderful job, and we have theories of evolution and such things, but it's all theories. I mean, everything we talk about is always the theory of, because we don't know.
And then it's hard to get your head around it, because there's, how do you know what you don't know? How can you possibly know all of the things that you don't know? It's, you just don't know.
Well, but that's why, to a certain extent, I think I tolerate a lot of the people we have in our industries, and the... I mean, I've got this theory on experts.
Go on.
This theory on experts that the word is just very loosely coined and very loosely sort of thrown around. Yeah. And I have what I call the expert criteria. And it means you need to have been in that job, working in that particular field of speciality for 50 years. You needed to be first, seconded, thirded, fourth and fifth by people you don't know, and then accepted by a panel of 500. And when everybody in the world agrees you're an expert, you're allowed to go on a website and call yourself an expert. Because we don't really know anything, do we? There's not a lot to know. I mean, you went quite high with 10%. I wouldn't have said more than 1%. We don't really know a lot, do we?
No. But so by that criteria, we are happy that David Attenborough is a...
And that's quite important to you that David Attenborough is an expert.
It's really important, yeah.
I hear that. Why
is that? Maybe because I think he's the only example I can think of by your classification of an expert.
I mean, there's a lot inside medical science and such things, isn't there?
Stephen Hawking is probably an expert. I think he probably knows a little bit about it.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. But I mean, in terms of our industry and where we are, it's like sports science is so young and so new. We haven't scratched the surface. We don't have an understanding of. There's so little. We know. I tell you what, we're doing a good job. It's important to start and say that. We're doing a great job.
Yeah, it's not like we're trying to say that we're all going through this blind. It's just that there's so much more for us to learn and develop that we're in the infancy of our training or of our programming.
Yeah,
I think a lot of people were like you said about experts. There's a lot of people where we're actually all on the same level playing field. Nobody actually knows any more than anybody else because we all literally fairly know the same. Sometimes it's just the application of it.
Yeah,
some people might apply it better. Like the guy's a genius in a sense of what he's done. The body coach. Have you heard of the body coach?
No.
So he's this nutrition guy who has become famous on Twitter. Sorry, not Twitter, Instagram, for the Lean In 15 system. So it's a 15-second video.
Right.
And he does a recipe within 15 seconds.
Right.
Each day. Like, what he's done to the nutrition industry, when you actually read his book, is no different to what any other guy out there knows. But what he's done, in terms of a genius point of view, is rather than, I think, sometimes in this industry, we can get a bit caught up in like, oh yeah, we know this. And this is what we know, and we tell people what we know. And especially with nutrition, most of the time, actually, if you sit back away from yourself or just watch people talking about nutrition and how much they know and explaining it to people from the deepest science point of view, these people that are stood in front of them that just want to lose weight, just like, all their questions are, what do I eat, John? And then he has gone and basically just taken all the science out of it.
Yeah.
But the science that he knows is what we know.
So his intelligence is conceptual.
Conceptual, the way he has applied it to that. But that's the thing. But he is now this expert he's talking about. But really, he's not an expert. Yeah. He's just provided a...
Yeah.
Applied
something really well.
Yeah. He's taught what he knows, very well, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's taught very well. Yeah. And what he knows is the same as everyone else. Because like I say, what do we actually know?
But I think that is the area there. Nutrition must be... of course it doesn't. But nutrition is one of those areas where we really don't know a lot. I mean, a nutrition is... For me, I tend to look at I can't use the word experts, having said that, but what do the leaders in our sports all agree upon? What are the common factors that you'll probably get now working inside cycling? What if we take the top 10 cycling coaches in the world, what do we all use? What's the common factor that we use with our athletes? And use that as the coincidences, because ultimately I think what we have are coincidences of we've done this and this with this amount of people, and that has, which is research ultimately, but we've done this and this and this with this amount of people and it's yielded X and Y result, so I'm going to do that. Love to study. I would like to think my anatomical and my physiological understanding of the body is as good as the next person's. But when you really challenge people to go right down deep and say, why is it, what happens? There's not many people there isn't anybody yet that can see what happens. And nutrition is that classic example because nobody agrees.
No, absolutely.
You know, inside cycling, we can say, you know what, if you want to be able to ride well over 4 hours, it's a good idea to do some rides over 4 hours. You know, and you've got that sort of obvious coincidence that if you want this power output, you potentially use this training system or this training method. Inside of nutrition, there is just a minefield. And it is very rare you meet two nutritional experts, or so-called experts, that would have the agreement. I mean, in a little bit of research for this podcast, I've tried to find out what it is I'm allowed to eat as an elite athlete. And I have found everything from, I should live from bananas, I should eat bananas for breakfast, bananas for lunch, bananas for dinner, and I will be fine, and my liver will be fine, and my enzymes count will be heart fine, and I'll burn fat, and I'll be loads of energy, and I'll be just a happy person. All the way through to, I should just eat red meat and steak. I should never eat anything else. Just for breakfast, a little bit of spinach is okay.
I know which one I'd prefer.
And I think we'd probably disagree there, Gemma, to be honest. So. Which one would you prefer?
Steak.
Yeah, I'd go bananas. But yeah, but I mean, the simple fact is, the fact that we've got those two worlds says two things to me. Either these guys are trying to sell something, in which case let's just discount them because they're nothing we want to use time on, or they've seen some form of results with what they're doing. Now, of course, other people might say, well, there's that sort of individuality that says one would benefit better from the other. Yeah, of course there's that. But the point is because, if you know, we know if I want to get better at riding mountains or I want to get stronger at squatting, I squat. But if I want to be healthier, if I want to lose weight, what should I do? Open the door and let the masses roam, because no one says this is what you should do. The sort of the things we do know are, don't eat junk food. And the only thing you can say in for this sort of nutrition everyone agrees with is don't eat processed foods.
Processed foods,
dairy limited.
Yeah, but there's not people. Dairy isn't limited. No, I mean.
I've read on the nutrition that I've read, like dairy seem to be the common factors. They all have different. These are just the book.
Yeah, channel. No, I'm just interested.
Like, but some of them are like high on supplementation. Some of them are avoid the grains, just eat the natural foods. Some of them are high protein, low carb. Like all these variants.
Calorific.
The common denominators across all books I saw was avoid processed foods.
Yeah, which is
limit your dairy. Limit your gluten. They were the kind of the three.
I mean, I think to be honest, limit gluten, limit dairy is still. Personally, again, I've seen some benefits with it. I think they're still very modern, cutting edge factors. I think if you go to your normal nutritionist helping normal people out on the street, it's very much calorific based, as in how much they're eating. And then don't eat processed foods, and that's about the only thing everyone
agrees on
or disagrees on.
I read an article about drinking, or 2 pints, 3 pints of milk every day will reduce your waist size. I mean, how can you have such conflicting advice from people that claim to be and in their field experts, when? Like exactly like you said, no one can agree. So how can there be a straight answer?
There's no consensus. Yeah, there's no consensus because what we can't do is we can see markers in blood. So you can see, I put that in my body and I can see that something happens inside my blood and I can see what goes up and what goes down and I can see what hormones are being transported. And I can see where it ends up. So I can see that ends up in a glycogen cell or that ends up in a fat cell or whatever.
Yeah.
That process... We don't understand that process. It's one of the things we don't know. We don't know where it goes. We don't know what happens. We can't control it. We can see blood markers. And then in a very isolated laboratory environment, we can see something go into a cell or we can take a cell out and take a biopsy and look at that. But the whole process of how this all fits together and the physiology of it, we have no idea.
No.
And we have no idea of, because of the variables... In terms of by eating one thing, we know, again, what we know, we have a neurological stimulus, we have the stomach sending signals, we have a liver that sends signals, we have a nervous system that sends signals, we have sensory from eating, the nose smell, we have all these senses going on at one time, and it's just far too big and far too complex for us to be able to say, when you do that, here's the algorithm and the list for what happens, and it's just too big. And I wonder if it's just too big for us ever to understand. I hope we do. I mean, it won't be in our lifetime. But in that respect, that's what I mean. We don't know a lot, and we can't follow that. What we can do, though, is we can say, well, when these people eat this, this happened to their body. Or when they follow this training system, this happened to them, which is the only research we have is... I mean, I've this sort of old saying that all research is anecdotal.
Yeah.
Because it is just coincidences of what we're doing.
This just got me out of this thought. It's just come to my process to my head right now with this conversation. Like, because I've lived on on meds for a considerable amount of my life and stuff, and it's one of them where the effect of a medication for all the guys, what they know, like, so is that medication, is the side effect, so is the side effect caused by the the medication you're putting in, as in as a direct of the ingredients, or is it the reaction by affecting the thing that they're measuring? It's a side effect of that change that it makes in the body.
Absolutely, but no one knows. That's the point.
Exactly. I've never thought about it.
And it's called a side effect because it's we're not really sure why it causes it, but we know we inhibit that or inhibit this tablet inhibits that or stimulates that, and the side effect of that is that. But why, we don't know. It's just that's what happens.
And they change the use of medications all the time as well because of that exact reason, don't they?
Yes.
So, they used to use some of the neuropathic pain medications that we have now as antidepressants or anti-epileptics, and then found that actually it works better for or differently for a different... But it's that almost stumbled upon that. Yeah. And I think that's what we kind of do, don't we? We kind of stumble upon things. And exactly. You say, oh my gosh, that works. Well, we'll keep that. That sounds like a great
idea. But what works is the result.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So the coincidental result, isn't it? And again, it's that what we don't know is we don't know how it works.
No, we don't know how that happens.
Yeah, you know, we just know that that's what happened. And that's the... I mean, the interesting point of this is if we could just fast forward 500 years and take Usain Bolt with us and understand what happened, would he run faster with that understanding? I don't know the result would be different, but it would just be nice for us to be a little bit safer in what we're doing, to understand a lot more than we do. And it's a... Like I say, it's a natural process.
On the Usain Bolt faster, have you ever seen that clip where they talked about the runners over the last 60 or 70 years, where they've actually calculated that potentially they're not any faster at all?
So
actually it's just the change in the track
and equipment
and the equipment and all the advances there that means that they're actually...
It wouldn't surprise me at all.
Which was pretty cool.
We have the same. You can talk about the same for golf. That just equipment's better, so they hit the ball further. Cycling. We often discuss it in cycling. Is how fast they went when they just had one gear on the frame and had the spare tire around their neck and a hat on and aluminium frames that weigh double the amount that would weigh now. I mean, and you look at the times they were riding some of the mountains, that's the good thing. You see some of the times they rode in the mountains there and now. And are we actually better fitter because of science now?
I had that debate with a PT years ago. Like, because she had a time trial. Time had come down, but she just bought a new bike. And I was like, your bike's better.
Yeah.
You know, the time's faster. Like, but it's the bike. It's not... You can't... Yeah. You got to have a time trial time on... Yeah. Bike X and bike Y to say that it's a personal best. It can't be you got to replicate the test. But like you say, that's scientific improvements. We've done it well in football. Like, that's same deal. Like, is our footballers better now? It seems like a faster game, but the ball's lighter. So
and training and surely has changed.
Training's changed. Yeah. Like, yeah. All things George Best used to rock up drunk and he had a steak for his pre-match meal like 30 minutes before, whereas now the nutrition's changed, the training's changed, and all these things. So are the guys, being a goalkeeper, stick up for the goalkeepers union, like, guys hit a ball now and that ball doesn't even fly in a straight line, like, because they want to see more goals and more spectacular goals, like, they're making it better for harder for the goalkeepers and everything like that. So get the violin out, but
small violin.
But where's the you didn't see those goals. Like, Bobby Charlton was the leader in his time for how hard he could hit the ball, and he would hit these screamers, and that was unnormal. Whereas now, like, a right back can just hit the shot of his life.
Yeah, that's what right backs, mate. Leave right backs alone.
You're a rugby boy, mate.
No, but I think that's it. I mean, I think that, I mean, we've talked a lot about systemic, like how a piece of food or running faster or slower, how, I mean, to understand the how all those systems inside the body intertwine with each other when we don't even understand the systems themselves. I mean, we haven't got a full grip on things. No one, I mean, unfortunately, everyone's sort of starting to say now we know what cramps are. But again, no one has physiologically been down in the cell, down at the cell level, and seen what a cramp is. I agree with a lot of the theories that are coming out, and it would be easy, if I disagreed, it would be a lot easier for me now, because then I could just go on a little bit of a rant, but I actually agree with a lot of the research, but we still don't know what causes cramps.
No.
You know, and so just inside the nervous system, we don't know a lot. We know a lot, we don't know as much as there is to know.
Yeah.
Muscular contraction, whether muscles grow or reproduce, we're sure they grow, but there's also some research, and more recently coming, that muscles might just replicate rather than grow bigger. Hypertrophy versus hyperplasia. Sliding filament theory is a theory of how muscles contract. Still a theory, okay, pretty accepted. I'm pretty down with it, that's right, but it's still not...
We don't know.
We're still not sure. Exactly. You know, we can't just unequivocally say that's it. And so within these systems within our body, we don't understand them. So how do we understand them systemically? How do we know then how the muscle system and nervous system work together, let alone with oxygen, let alone with... Because the next job is to say, it's huge. The enormity of it is huge. And I think what I see regularly is I see a lot of athletes that use a lot of time, a lot of psychological time on things that they don't need to use so much time on. You know, and you just go to the swim training, at the low club, and you've got the arguments and the discussions on the millimetres of where a hand should be, or run training, and the arguments on foot here or foot there, and land here or land there. And you think, I've dedicated the last 17 years of my life to understanding the human body, and I've coached for 17 years, and I've worked hard for 17 years. And some people there, you've got some who, I feel sorry for them, have run 3 marathons or done an Ironman, and then are just running around with this information loosely, throwing it around and things. And it just creates a massive confusion. And unfortunately, that's rather than the fitness and the training and the health business being this positive, how do we help each other, how do we get better, how do we win things, it's trying to tell people what they should do. When I really wish, in respect, they would maybe listen to the podcast here and just realise what the best scientists in the world, we're there, we agree, we don't know, we're trying our best, we're working hard, but there's a lot we don't know, eh?
I mean, like what you're saying there about somebody's without experience is just throwing, with not much experience, is giving his opinion and what people should do, and that's the nature of the internet. And like I say to people all the time, like, why are people willing, especially with the body? Like, it's this thing that what we do know is currently at present, if you mess something up considerably and need surgery and replace a joint, that joint cannot do the joint that they replace it with currently is not as good as the joints that we have naturally.
Yeah.
Of course,
yeah.
They can't replicate it, they can't replicate the function, so you are going to be at a full, you're going to have a diminished capacity because of that new joint. But people will go on Google and search, I've got something wrong with my body, what do I do?
Yeah.
But when the car breaks down, they don't go on Google.
They go to the mechanic.
They go to the mechanic. And like I say, all right, we don't know. Well, I'm not saying that we know, but people should, at least the people that have experience in these things, people should seek out, I've got a pain here, I need to go do something about it.
Yeah.
Let's go see somebody that knows a little bit more.
Some coincidental data that they can apply to that particular problem. Yeah, yeah, precisely.
Rather than just take a gamble with my one body. Yeah.
And worry about it. That's the thing you find, isn't it? People come in and they've searched on the internet, which is fine because people are trying to do things for themselves. They're trying to self-manage or self-improve, which is understandable. But then you see everything from what we very rarely see to what we see all the time. So we have this saying that when you hear hooves, expect a horse and not a zebra. I mean, the chances of you having having something that you desperately need to be concerned about is, and so people come in and worry about things, and it is the it's the unknown that people are more concerned about. So
the unknown, but the confusion.
Yeah, that's
I mean,
yeah.
I mean, the confusion. I could never, in my, I mean, the classic one is when I'm out training a group that I'm not responsible for. Of course, I'm responsible for their training that day, but I've got my athletes, and if I see something with my athletes, I'd always go in and say, "I need you to do this and this and this." But if I have an open run session, for example, and just invite people that we're going to do some running together, and here's the session, I could never, under any circumstances, go over to one of them and say, "You're running wrong," or "You're doing this," or "You should do this." I can go over and say, "Do you mind if I help? I've seen something based on my experience that I think could help you." But I would never have the audacity to go over and say, "You need to do, you're doing that wrong."
Yeah, because, you know, how is it wrong? We don't know that's wrong for that one specific person.
But it could be,
it could be, like you said, it's your experiences which will absolutely help. But how do we know what exact the right...
Well, we don't. We don't. That's the point, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think in what we, in kind of what we do know, like, that's the thing with the difference between now what's natural in a sense of a technique such as running or swimming, what's natural versus what is sport. So what is optimal for sport. So run technique, like, where should I hit the... where should my foot hit the floor?
But I mean,
that's all based off, again, what we don't know, science, but that's to run as fast as possible versus what's natural. And sometimes that there's this divide of, here's what nature would do. And is that the fastest place in the world? No, but it's what's natural versus, because, I mean, we've all talked many times about when we agree, like, too far down one path and we start to create problems for the body. So, yes, we are, like, these elite end level athletes versus the guy that sat on the couch, too much of either end, and we start to create problems. So those changes that we're making to techniques to make people faster potentially could be harmful. We don't know yet, but potentially could be harmful. But at the moment, they're making people faster, and that's their be all and end all. So that's all that matters.
Yeah.
But what is natural? So why are we don't know.
But I think that's the thing. I think we learn from the consequence of our actions. And the classic example of that is smoking.
Yeah.
You know, smoking was prescribed by doctors to solve lots of problems.
The guys in the forces were given packets of cigarettes. And that, I mean, that happened for a long old time.
Yeah.
And the other example is they used to give singers cigarettes and say it would... help their voice, help their throat and their vocal cords.
Yeah.
I mean, they did a quick turnaround on that, didn't they?
But the consequence of that was smoking's bad. We got ill. And that's the thing now. That's why we need to be very careful with the amount of concepts and equipment and things that are coming forward in the sporting world. Because there are some smoking in there.
Yeah.
There are some cigarettes in these equipments coming. I can't tell you which one is going to stand the test of time and which one isn't. I mean, 15 years ago, everybody was on a Swiss ball. They're slowly gone, fading out, because they've just not stood the test of time, because people found out they were actually worse than they caused more damage than they helped with. And there are lots of concepts and things in the industry now which are cigarettes. And that's the thing, isn't it? It's almost the exciting part of it is what is going to... You can almost have a spread bet on what is going to stand the test of time and what's going to still be here in 10 years' time out of all the concepts that are there.
And it wasn't that long ago that we were telling people to lie on a door on their bed when they had lower back pain for 2 weeks. I mean, that would just be laughed
it's
out of the room now.
It?
I mean, it's ridiculous,
it?
Yeah.
So there's a lot we don't know.
But that's fine, because we've got
loads
to
move forward.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's like, exciting, isn't it? If it's open.
Yeah, this thing, like, if we weren't able to, if there's nowhere else to go and you're not making people better, then you're in trouble.
Yeah.
And then that's a worry. Like, that was always, I mean, that's why we got into doing what we do. I want to know why this person feels this and why this, like with the old exercise world, it's interesting how the industry goes. Like, when I first got into the industry, it was very much a case of you went on courses and was told what to do when you see certain things.
Yeah.
And then, so you go through those protocols, and then those protocols stop working. Or you find somebody that it didn't work on, and now you've got nowhere to go.
Because you've only got those
tools and those tick boxes. And what's great about the way we currently apply stuff is I've now got somewhere to go. I might see something and go down a path, but now I've potentially got somewhere else to go. Yeah. And then the more we find out about the body with everything that's constantly coming through, then we're going to have even more places to go, rather than just having the one
protocol.
And that's why people get those conflicting advices, though, isn't it? Because people often ask, well, why have I been given this to do? And so-and-so said I should be doing this. When there are more than one way to do things, and if you've got a couple of pathways that you can choose and you can go down and you can see different things, then that's why everything is different, because not everybody will agree upon the right path, but also have different experiences as to what is successful. And so that is why you see more conflicting advice.
Absolutely.
I used to remember back in the day in the Globo gym, like in the PT kind of team that we had, we were given like monthly training kind of workshops where we'd get one of our experts in. We get one of the experts in and they might present on something, and then for the next few days everyone with all the clients was doing what we'd done on the workshop.
Yeah.
That was kind of what we did.
Yeah, and it's because
regardless of whether they needed it.
Yeah.
And whether it was right for that person. And that, like I say, that's, I don't know, as I said, therapy, I'm not really in, I obviously do therapy, but I don't, I'm not busy watching other therapists because I'm too busy doing what I'm doing. But is that same principle going on in the therapist has just been on
a course,
scratch your armpit course, and that fixes hamstrings. So they're doing that with all their guys for the next 2 months until they've been on the next course. And
but that's the whole sort of novice expert thing, isn't it? I mean, when you first learn something, anything, you feel like you know all there is to know about that one thing. So when I came out of university, I was like, yeah, I've got this. Like, this is easy. I know exactly about the body. I know everything. And then as you go through your career, you suddenly start to perceive that actually you really don't know everything, and it becomes overwhelming with how little you can know, and how little that you know, and the fact that everybody doesn't sit in these wonderful little boxes for you that you were led to believe initially. And then when you start to go through your career a little bit further, you start to become more confident and comfortable with the fact that you just don't know everything and that you haven't got the answers for everything. And I think that's fine, because
You become humble enough to look your patients in the eye and say, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Or you get humble enough to say, you know what, I don't understand everything there is to know. I think that's important. One thing I do know is I need a coffee.
Another one, mate.
Yeah. Shot in the dark.
That was great. I'm good for now.
Okay, I'll take one. Next week, we're going to be talking about injury psychology, or the psychology of injury. And we hope you'll join us. Pour yourself a coffee. And have a lovely day.